Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Coors Light presents Heavy Montreal. July 28th and 29th, outdoors at Parc Jean Drapeau. Featuring Avenged Sevenfold, Rob Zombie, and Marilyn Manson. A weekend of hard rock and metal with Gojira, Emperor, Under Oath, Hollywood Undead, and many more. Festival passes are on sale now. See the full lineup at HeavyMontreal.com. Produced by Evenco.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and
anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. Here's an old classic that sounds just as good today as it did when we were kids.
but I won't be the martyr. I know you see it wrong, the cover don't belong. I'm holding tight, don't you push me too far. Yes, me against the world. It's me against the world. It's me against the world. Don't you push me too far. It's me against the world. Me against the world.
Alrighty, welcome to another episode. This is episode 748. Unbelievable.
It's crazy.
Yeah, my voice is still scratchy because I think I blew it out during Queensryche at M3, just screaming my head off
you
and
tend
crying
to do that.
Because
yeah.
They went in when they started playing screaming in digital. I couldn't believe they were reaching for such a deep cut that I love so much. What a great time it was at M3. I'm so sorry you weren't there this year. You will be there next year, guaranteed, Emily.
I was so sad to miss out. I really, really missed you guys a ton.
Real quick, we got two great guests, Mark Torian from Bullet Boys, and the one, the only Lizzie Borden is back, guys, and he's here on Talking Metal. So we're going to get to those interviews in just a minute, but Emily, you have a community theater performance that's going on, and I saw it on Sunday. You're doing such a great job, and I'm such a terrible husband because I didn't go to the first opening night because I went down to M3, but you're such
worst.
A cool wife because you let me do that, and I thank you for that, and I'm so sorry you missed M3, but you're excellent in it. It's called Legally Blonde. It's playing in South Orange, New Jersey at the Interact Theater, the Beard.
It's at the Baird, but yeah, the name Baird. Of the theater company is Interact.
Right, and you do a great job and
thanks.
Really steal the show. So everyone who lives in New Jersey should go see that in South Orange, playing this May 2018, Legally Blonde, starring Emily.
Starring? You're so, yeah. I'm not.
No, you are. It is starring you.
I mean, you're not. I'm a featured role, probably.
Okay.
Something like that.
All right.
I jump rope while I'm singing.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's seriously, it's awesome. I think out of all the shows you've done, I mean, it's one of my favorites. It really is.
Really?
Yeah. It's
better
really
than
good.
9 to 5?
No, I like the 9 to 5 better.
For those of you who don't know, I played Dora Lee Rhodes, which is the Dolly Parton role in 9 to 5. That was my favorite role ever.
Yeah, no, that was awesome. That was and you were amazing in that. All your performances have been good, but I really enjoyed seeing Legally Blonde, and you're to me, especially in the second half, you're one of the main characters. So
I guess so.
Yeah, absolutely. So on that note, enough of that. Let's gear up for lots of M3 coverage coming to Talking Metal and TalkingRock.net. Oh man, so many interviews: Lynch Mob, Queensryche, Lon Friend, Tony Higbee from Damon Johnson and Tom Kiefer's band. Who else? Tammy Down, who hasn't done a lot of interviews lately. We got one. It'll be on the very next episode. Steve Sex Summers, although he doesn't like the sex anymore. He just wants to be known as Steve Summers. I start the interview off. I'm like, we are here on Talking Metal with Steve Sex Summers. And he's like, what? It's not 1989 anymore. I don't.
Did you know,
you're still
started,
using
did
this
you start
sex
it again?
Thing? He's like, no, it's I thought it was pretty funny. But yeah. Anyways, we'll get to that interview in the very next episode. On this show, we have two interviews, Lizzie Borden and Mark from Bullet Boys. We're going to get right into those. But first, let's thank the supporters. You guys are so awesome. You're buying the t-shirts, which are for sale. Send me $20 if you live in the United States. I'll send you a Talking Metal t-shirt. The PayPal is my email, strigelmark, strigelmark, @gmail.com. If you want a Talking Metal t-shirt, send me $20 via PayPal to that address, and I will send you a t-shirt. Just let me know your size. You can go to the show notes on talkingmetal.com, and my PayPal is also listed there. The Amazon links, you guys are doing great. You're using the Amazon links. Keep using them. I appreciate that. And Patreon is exploding. Emily, who are our wonderful, awesome Patreon supporters?
The best. Here we go. JB Allen, Anthony Mackey, Jay Vaninsky. Hey, Jay. James Bennett, Rick Bunch, David Gray, Fred Rutt, Steve Hoker in the house, Mike Jones, BJ Gukowski, Sean Morgan, Dan Metaldan, Sean Morgan. Oh,
you've got did Sean I write Morgan it twice?
Written twice.
Oh.
Jonathan Turner, Ron Embody, Michael Street, Ralph Petrie, and John Boveri. We love you guys. Thank you so much.
I'm so glad that you noticed that I wrote it twice, because I noticed there were 17 current Patreon people. Yeah. And then I wrote down, and I thought I had 18. I was like, oh, one of them must have quit. But yeah, but that's good news.
I'm a regular detective.
Yeah. And Michael Street, by the way. You know Michael. We had dinner with him in Nashville.
Oh, yeah. What's up, dude?
It was Michael Street, John Astronomy, Emily, myself, and Michael Butler. Do you remember that?
Yes, of course I do.
After the Rock and Pod Expo. So
that was
Michael,
a blast.
Great guy. Thank you for supporting us here on Talking Metal. All right, enough of that, enough business. Now let's get to the interviews and the music. We open the show up with a crazy classic song called Me Against the World. Lizzie Borden, man, I loved this guy growing up. And I tell you what, let's get into some more Lizzie Borden right now. This is from 2000, There Will Be Blood Tonight, by Lizzie Borden, followed by my interview with Lizzie Borden here on Talking Metal.
We'll be right back.
We are here in New York City, Midtown Manhattan, and we are speaking with the one and only Lizzie Borden. Welcome back to Talking Metal after, I think, 11 years was the last time you were on.
The 11 years seems to be like the number.
Right.
11 years since the last record, 11 years since I've talked to you.
Yeah, well, that makes sense because I think you're probably promoting...
Appointment with Death.
And we are now excited to talk about the brand new record, My Midnight Things, out June 5th.
15th.
15th, okay. Good. Thanks for correcting that. You know, it's out through the label that I think has been associated with you throughout your career.
From the beginning.
Yeah, I want to talk about the new record specifically, but let's start with Metal Blade. Okay. I mean, again, every record on Metal Blade?
Everyone.
Everyone, yeah. Wow. I mean,
a lot of them have gone out, like the first few went through Capitol for distribution, and then they switched over to Warner Brothers, so they put it out. And then it went to a few other places, and then wound up at Sony now.
Okay. And let's go back to the beginning with your relationship with Metal Blade and Brian Slagle. How did Brian and you first come in contact?
We were rehearsing at a studio called Harlequin. Actually, Black Sabbath was there working on their Mob Rules, or their Mob Live Evil album.
Live Evil, okay.
And someone came into our rehearsal space because they had a whole bunch of rehearsal space and they really loved what we were doing in there. And they came in and said, hey, you know, there's some guy who puts out records and you might want to go talk to him.
Yeah.
And they told me he was working at a record store.
Yeah.
So I went, okay. We had a little demo and I brought it in, me and Joey, the drummer.
Right.
And I went in there and I went up to the guy at the cashier and said, hey, and I told him the story. And he goes, yeah, it's me, Brian. You know,
right.
I have my own label. And I went, oh, cool. Well, here's a demo tape. And let me know what you think.
Yeah.
And so he goes, okay. And then we went to go looking through records and stuff. And then all of a sudden he starts playing it. And
yeah.
We're like, holy shit, he's playing. And there was, you know, 30 or 40 people in the record store.
Yeah.
And there was like two or three songs on the album, I think. And all of a sudden he comes running out and he goes, oh, my God, I love this. He goes, one of these songs will be on the next Metal Massacre.
Wow.
And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, once we did that, the reaction was so big that he offered us a deal.
That's amazing. And so which song ended up on Metal Massacre?
It was a song called Rod of Iron.
Rod of Iron. And did you re-record it or did he use the demo?
Well, that
version?
Was the one caveat with Metal Blade. They had no money.
Right.
So
I mean, you guys were just kids, yeah, both of you. Yeah. Literally, yeah.
But we had a relationship with that studio because we knew, you know, we'd rehearse there with other bands that we put together.
Right.
So we had gone, I think we had three bands and Lizzie Borden was like the third. And so he says, okay, go record. And I'm like, I got to pay for it? And he goes, yeah. So I actually had to go pay for it. You know,
right.
So, but we had already recorded a demo, kind of a rough demo. So it was very easy. We walked in and just did it. And even though we had no studio skills, there was a good engineer there and he walked us through it and we got it done. But yeah, I had to pay for it.
Nice. And here we are in 2018, like what, I don't know, 30 some years later, right? And the new record out on Metal Blade, Midnight Things. What, I mean, it's 11 year gap since the last record. And I know you've been touring and staying busy with the band, right? But no new music this past 11 years, which is, you know, not uncommon for a lot of bands. Why did you decide it was time in 2018 to put out new music?
Well, the main thing is I miss being a recording artist. I love the whole touring, you know, writing cycle, albums, recording, putting the album out, doing the press, and then launching the tour. And then when the tour is over, you go back and start at the beginning.
Yeah.
To me, that was the perfect way to do things. And when you take out that element, it was just the touring. And for us, it was unique because we were mostly playing in Europe and South America and in the Asian markets in front of a young crowd.
Right.
So a lot of the young kids were seeing us for the very first time. So
cool.
for them, It was 1985.
Right, right.
And for me, it was 1985 because they're reacting the same way as the kids did back then.
Wow, that's great.
So I was like going, okay, well, we're not missing a beat live. And the shows were well put together shows. You know, we did the Appointment with Death show for a few years. Mm-hmm. And then we did the 30th anniversary show, which was more of a collection. And it was done really well. And it was, I mean, we had, everywhere we played, we got great reviews. So it's not like we were just touring aimlessly. We actually did launch tours,
right?
But with no, we weren't supporting a new album, and that was the thing that was killing me, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't. I put out "Deal with the Devil" and "Appointment with Death," and it was right when the music industry collapsed. So yeah. the albums were just kind of tossed out there,
right?
And when you toss albums out there after you've been working on them for so long, with no fanfare, no marketing, no nothing, it wasn't reaching the crowd, you know, the people that we wrote it for. And if it's not, if it's, you know, what's the point, you know?
Yeah.
That was what I was thinking. Like, why go in there and bust my ass writing these songs and producing these songs and, you know, doing everything I have to do to just make a record that no one, the people that actually might like it will never even know it exists.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, but Brian talked me into saying, you know, the Metal Blade has found their way now. And
yeah,
now,
I've heard him saying that in the press.
They're
actually
so successful. Yeah. They're more successful than they ever were right
really?
Now. Really?
Yeah. Wow.
Almost probably at least half their roster goes top five on Billboard.
Wow.
Or at least top 10.
Yeah.
And that's crazy for an independent label.
Yeah. You know?
So they found their way. And so, you know, he came back and he talked me into making a record again, so here we are.
Awesome. And you know, again, the new record, guys, it's Midnight, My Midnight Things by Lizzie Borden, out June 15th on Metal Blade. I cannot wait. I mean, I loved your stuff as a kid, and I want to get into that. But just as an artist, you know, even what you said is very cool, and I understand that financially Metal Blade is probably doing better than they used to. However, there's not a ton of money in releasing new music today. So as an artist, is this just something that you need to do too? I mean, is there an artistic need inside of you to put out this music?
Well, I mean, even in the 80s, there wasn't a ton of money.
Right.
Because they spent so much money marketing.
Right.
That you have... It's like a bad bank loan, you know, right. for a band. You have to pay that money back.
Sure.
And that money gets paid back first. So, you know, even bands that sold 2 million records, they might end up with nothing in the end.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the same premise except for you might make money this time because that bad bank loan is not so bad anymore.
Okay.
It's better record deals, and you were able to record them a lot cheaper now too. You don't have to spend a ton of money. And I just recorded a video over the weekend with some top-notch, you know, directors.
Cool.
And, you know, a video like what we did in the last 2 days would have cost $500,000 in the 80s. It's a fraction of that
right
now. So, cool. You know, things have changed with technology to make it feasible to do it. And if you do it right, then you can make money.
Awesome. And what song did you shoot the video for?
A song called "Long May They Haunt Us."
Awesome. Cool.
It's probably the most meaningful song on the album because it's about, you know, I lost two guitar players in my band who passed away, and
Alex and Corey. And Corey.
And wow. You know, and not just them, but a lot of other people. Those people, you know, they haunt you because you think about them all the time.
Right.
But you don't ever want that haunt to go away. You always want that memory to stay in your mind. And that's kind of the way I wrote that song.
Wow. Cool. Well, I can't wait to hear it. And that'll probably, what is that going to drop around the time the record drops?
I think it'll be done in about a week and a half.
Oh,
so
awesome.
It'll be out soon.
Awesome. Cool. When you look back, I mean, I was looking back at the records you put out, like, let's say between like 1984 and 87, in that like short 3 year period. I mean, it's mind blowing, you know, the Love You to Pieces, which of course had one of my favorite tunes, American Metal, just that anthemic song, and Love You to Pieces. Then like less than a year later, there was Ultraviolence, the Murderous Metal Roadshow, which I had the I remember the vinyl I had opened up with all the pictures inside. Yeah. I still have it at home. It's awesome. I mean, and then shortly after, Menace to Society, Visual Lies. I mean, it was just a bang, 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 bang. I mean, it's when you look at bands today, even the younger bands, I mean, no one puts out music like that anymore. Why has the industry, do you think, not just for you know, older bands, but younger bands, why don't we put out music like they used to in the 80s? Is it still the financial thing, or is it like...
You know, I don't know. I mean, I grew up on those bands like Aerosmith and Kiss, and Aerosmith, they put out 4 albums in like 3 years, their first 4 albums. It was just insane.
Right.
You know, that amount. And Kiss was putting out 2 albums a year plus touring.
Right.
And it's crazy because... You know, that's what I was thinking in my head. So, like, once we did one record, we'd do a tour. And mostly, at that time, it was just North American tours.
Right.
So you just do a lap around the States, and then come back, go right back into writing.
Right.
And then you do the same thing over and over and over again. And I loved it. And the creative, you know, juices were flowing. After I finished one record, I'm already thinking about how to do the next.
Right.
You know, much in the same way as Stephen King writes novels. You know, he's... You know, before he's finished with the one he's working on, he's already mapped out the next one.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a work ethic, you know, and I don't think that's there now. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, everyone has their own way of doing things, you know. And
right.
But I've already started writing the next record.
Really? Oh, yeah. Wow. Wow, cool. Yeah. Well, I do want to circle back to the new record, which, again, is My Midnight Things. But a couple other questions before we do that. The band Starwood that you had for a while, right?
It was a couple of years. It was fun.
That's my question. How do you look back on that?
It was just fun. Yeah. You know, it was pure fun. It got me to be able to write songs that were not Lizzie Borden, and I wrote them in a more rock and roll way.
Right. Yep.
And it was more of my the glitter rock influences that I had,
yeah.
And I wanted to get that out. And so that was the main premise behind that. It was just about fun.
Right on. And when you specifically look back on what happened in Hollywood on that the Sunset Strip, you know, between like 1980 and the end of the 80s. I mean, you were there. You were really one of the first bands out there doing it, kind of igniting the scene. I mean, is it true you were one of the first bands to flyer Sunset Strip? Is that?
Oh yeah, yeah. We were the first band to do many things. Those, you know, the banners that go in front of all the amps.
Yeah,
I was the first one to come up with that because I was just copying Kiss. Because you know, I had seen Destroyer, and you couldn't see any of the amps because they had their stage production in front of it.
Right.
And I was like, why am I marketing Marshall?
Yeah.
You know, and at that time, all the guitar players were ruling the band, their own bands, but I started the band and I'm a singer. So to me, it was about marketing Lizzie Borden.
Right.
So I said, let's put the logo in front of those amps. And, you know, the guitar players hated it, and no other bands were doing it. All the other bands had, you know, fake empty cabinets, you know, like Eddie Van Halen, just a ton of cabinets. And that was what their presentation was. But for me, I just said, I don't want to market Marshall. I want to market Lizzie Borden. So we made 2 giant banners and put them in front of the amps. They were huge, way bigger than most people use now. But we were the first to do that.
Wow.
And that's caught on. Now every band does it.
Yeah.
And they have been for since then. So, but yeah, at the beginning, I just found pictures of us at the Troubadour using flash pots and everything. But you see the crowd. It was a supper club. So everyone sat down at these long tables, and they would sit and watch this show. And even though we'd blow fire in their faces, it was just, you know, they were looking, going, what is this? You know, back then there was no system in place, because it was coming out of the 70s. And at the Troubadour especially, it was folk music, you know, so nothing but folk music. And they turned it into a heavy metal club in like a couple of months.
Right.
And all those bands, you know, Wasp started like 2 months before us. And a lot of the other bands, we all started, you know, within a year of each other.
Right.
And we inspired each other to keep going, because everyone was part of the same scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
And leather jackets and all that, you know, all that stuff happened all at the same time, you know.
Was there a point, I mean, it was, you know, there was, in the beginning, it was, you guys were there, you mentioned Wasp, I'm guessing, like, you know, Armored Saint and Motley Crue. Yeah. But was there a point where it got to a point where you were just like, okay, this scene is over, it's tapped out, busloads of people were coming in, starting bands. I mean, when did the scene kind of, the magic that was going on there die for you?
Well, for me, it was, I always equate it with the gold rush, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's a good, they're all coming out.
Yeah.
to get the gold, you right. know. And in this case, it was all coming out to be part of the scene and become and join a band and become a rock star, you know. But I lived there, so I yeah. was there before it all started. And it was a ghost town before they came. And then when they came, it was a lot of energy.
Right.
But we grew so big, you know. We were a big fish in a big pond.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to be a local band. I wanted to be a national, international act. So the first thing that I did was, after we put out the first record, is I borrowed my dad's motorhome and we went on tour. We booked shows on our own.
Yeah.
And we
got out of there.
Yeah. We played that's how we played Lemoore's here. Right. And we played, you know, Detroit. And we played, you know, all these great markets that if we had just stayed, you know, as a local band,
yeah.
that's what we would have died that way, you yeah. know. So I got us out of there real quick. And, you know, once you leave, someone else takes your place.
Right.
You know, and I was happy to not be the local band anymore. I wanted sure. to be an international act, and that's what we became. So, you know, the scene eventually petered out probably. For me, we were touring, and it was still fun until, like, 92. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I started to go, okay, well, everyone's into all these other bands, and they sound nothing. They're not that. They're not fun. It's more like a whole different genre.
Right.
And there's merit to that genre, of course. But the way I looked at it, the entertainment aspect was gone, as far as, you know, putting on being a performer.
Theatrical show.
You know, most people it turned into musicians were the performers now, and even because right. they weren't really performing, they were just playing their instruments.
Right.
So, you know, that's when I knew, okay, well, this is done at least in North America for a while anyway. I knew it was going to come back around, and it took a long time, but it's starting to now.
Right.
Which, you know.
Right on. Cool. Well, just to round things out, let's circle back to the new record, My Midnight Things. Out June 15th on Metal Blade by Lizzie Borden. We are talking to the one and only Lizzie Borden. Who do you work with on the record? Did you have a producer with you, or did you?
I produced it along with Joey Scott. You know, he plays drums and he co-produced with me. Cool. Yeah, I didn't think I could find a producer that wanted. You know, I wanted to do this album in a unique way. And I didn't think, you know, all the new producers not influenced by the influences that I have, mm-hmm. and I didn't want to sound like I was keeping up with the Joneses,
right, right.
And so I wanted to be more isolated. So I recorded everything by myself in a loft area in an industrial section, mostly around 3 a.m.
Wow.
So you can hear that in my voice.
Yeah.
You know, that complete. Absolutely silent, alone guy singing in this studio, by himself.
Yeah.
So I wanted that to come out in my voice, and so that I did it on purpose, you know.
Yeah.
So I didn't think I could do that in a regular studio setting with a producer going, you know.
Right.
So I'm not saying I won't use a producer in the future, but for this album, I kind of knew what I wanted.
Nice. And musicianship wise, who else is rounding out the album?
The album with you? Joey's on drums, then I used a friend of ours called Marlies Mullenberger, and she's a pianist, and she's absolutely amazing.
Cool.
And she's very dark and melancholy, even if it's an up-tempo song.
Yeah, nice.
So I was like, you know, and I sent her one song. I only intended her to play on one song, and I sent it to her, and she loved it so much that she said, send me more. So every time I finished a song, I'd send it to her, and she put her little bits and pieces on there, and it was just magic.
Cool.
It actually worked so well together.
Awesome.
So, and then the rest of it I did myself. So it was
guitars.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're handling all the guitars.
Yeah, on this album. Yeah, cool. I've done it on other albums too. But
right.
I sometimes don't take credit for it.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Cool. And bass, you're handling all the bass too.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
I've done that before too. So.
Awesome. Awesome. Cool. Well, My Midnight Things, again, coming out on Metal Blade in June. And will there be touring, Lizzie? Are you going to plan a tour to support the record?
I'm working on the show right now, and the biggest show we've ever done is the Visualize tour, and this already looks like it's going to be bigger, the production wise.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of writing the script for it right now, and once I get that close, then I'll find the musicians that they'll go out on tour with me.
Okay.
Because I need to kind of custom fit them into the show.
Right.
And but I wanted to wait till the album came out because we haven't had an album in 11 years. So I didn't want to start playing songs that no one's ever heard. It just doesn't make sense. So like, I'm letting the album come out, letting it breathe a little bit. Everyone gets to listen to it and then gets used to the song. So when I come out with the tour and play these songs, they'll be, you know, everyone will know them, you know. So that's why I decided not to just go out with a bang, you know, as soon as the album comes out, start touring.
Right.
So, you know.
And do you imagine you'd be doing like a headlining tour or maybe a package tour?
I'm hoping a package tour. Even though I'm looking for a big stage production, I'm still looking for that great package. Always been looking for that great package.
Yeah, so. I mean, I just saw like Saxon and Judas Priest, and that for the old time fan, I love that. I'd love to see you guys with Priest. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
as opposed to, and nothing against these bands, but like a Trivium or something. You know, I'd much rather see two bands that kind of come from the same place and time together. So
I would too. I mean, I saw that same tour in Vegas and it was awesome.
I
hope that we can find a package. If not, we'll see what happens.
Very good.
But you know, the main thing is to put the show together and then get the album out and see what the response is. You know, so far it's been the best. I'm doing interviews all around the world.
Yeah,
I've never heard a response like this to any Lizzie Borden record ever. Wow. It's always been, you know, this or that, but they love the, you know, they, most of them have the whole album. So they're like, I love every song on this album.
And the single is out, right?
Yeah. The lyric video for the title track's out. And then I just recorded the actual first video over the weekend.
What you mentioned. Yeah.
Just finished it this morning. So
cool.
We're starting this, we put the train back on the track, so we're I'm hoping to get My Midnight Things out to everybody.
Yeah, well, let's do it. You mentioned the title track, and again, this is up on iTunes and Spotify and all the normal places, Amazon. Right now, you can go download it or stream it, and it is exactly what you'd want from Lizzie Borden. It is called My Midnight Things, off the new album of the same title, which is coming out on Metal Blade. Lizzie, thanks so much.
Thank you. And you can pre-order it right now. You get the vinyl, the colored vinyl, and the t-shirt, and all the stuff. There's different packages. So, it's pretty cool. We've never had that before. You know, so this is the very first time for us, even though, you know, other bands have had it up until this point, but we haven't had an album in 11 years. So
right on. And we will have links up where you can buy all the different packages in today's show notes on talkingmetal.com and talkingrock.net. And as far as your online presence goes, where's the best place or places people can check you out online?
Instagram, Real Lizzie Borden, and Facebook, Real Lizzie Borden, and Lizzie Borden Band.
Cool.
And then lizzieborden.com.
Excellent. And we'll have all those linked too also through today's show notes on talkingmetal.com. Thank you, Lizzie.
Thank you so much, man.
I want you. desire. I wanna live in a dream of my midnight things. Bring on the pain. I need the power. Give me all. I can be power. So I can live in the dream of my midnight things. I want the flames. I want the fire. I want all that I desire.
Some brand new Lizzie Borden music, guys. Go buy that on iTunes. Check out the new album. It's coming out on Metal Blade. Some great stuff in that interview. And a big thanks to Chip for lining it up. I did it in a hotel in New York City. If you want to see a picture of me and Lizzie Borden hanging out in the hotel room, go to the show notes on talkingrock.net or talkingmetal.com. Cool. And also wanted to mention that I think during the interview, I said that the last time Lizzie was on Talking Metal was 2007. That's actually wrong. The last time Lizzie Borden was on Talking Metal was episode 72 from 2006. This is, of course, episode 748. So it's been far too long, and I'm so glad we got him back here on Talking Metal. Emily does the next interview, guys. Who are we going to hear from, Emily?
Mark Torian from Bullet Boys. And this is the second time I've had the honor of interviewing him, and I've been able to hang out with him a few times now too, which you'll hear about in the interview.
Cool. And we will hit some old Bullet Boys right now, and then after the interview we'll hear some new Bullet Boys. Here we go. This is Crosstop off of Zaza from 1993. Ted Templeman produced this, the great guy who worked with Van Halen. And has a book coming out, I think, co-written by Greg Renoff. So look forward to reading that. But anyways, this is, again, Bullet Boys going way back to 1993, followed by Emily's interview with Mark from Bullet Boys. This is Crosstop.
Crosstop sucking everything you sky. Ooh, Lord.
Hello, Talking Metal listeners. Emily Striegel here today with you. And on the phone, I've got Mark Torian from the Bullet Boys. How are you, Mark?
Good, Emily. How you doing, darling?
Awesome. Last time I saw you was in Brooklyn, New York.
Yes.
At a Faster Pussycat show. Do you remember this?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah, so you were out. You were touring. You were touring, right? And you had like a night off. And so you zipped over. I don't know where you were coming down from, like Connecticut or something. And you came down for the night to see.
Something like that. Yeah. Yep. And we came in from, we were just out of the city. Yeah.
So we ended up, our listeners will get a kick out of this. I think we watched some of the set and then you were like, I'm hungry. Let's go find some pizza.
Yeah. Just, totally.
Don't tell Ace, but you, me, and Jerry, and Cruiser was with us. I think we just took off on foot, like looking for pizza.
Yes, we did.
Like in Bushwick, in Bushwick, Brooklyn, just like on foot. And someone was like, "Oh, we were like, where's some pizza?" And they like, they put us, they were pointing us like in, you know, this direction and that direction. We ended up walking about a mile. And then we ended up back at the club, like at a deli, and you just ended up getting a sandwich, right?
I ended up getting a sandwich because people were telling us to go to this great pizza place that we couldn't find, and we were totally bummed.
It was so fun. It was hysterical. And then I got a super huge treat. I got to hear a little sneak peek of the new album, which came out recently from Out of the Skies.
Yeah, it was what me, you, Christian, and Jerry. We sat in the van.
Yep.
And I was able to play some. Yeah, you were like one of the very first people to actually really hear it.
It was so cool. And there's nothing better than listening to an album in a car. Like there's just something like cranking it up, and that was so fun. And it's amazing. I told you then, and I'll tell you again now, it's such a great album. Are you guys having a good time? You've been touring and supporting it a little bit. You were over...
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Yeah, we were out in... we had 14 days in the UK, so we just got back from our UK run. It will be our first of many. We had such a brilliant time. We had Enough opening up for us and another amazing band called Butterside. Those guys were just amazing and really, really good people. Shout out to the guys from Butterside, definitely. We just got back, and now we, on the 1st, we're leaving to Australia. So we have 4 dates here in Australia, and we're so excited because it's our first time ever into Australia. So we're just like completely stoked. So it's going to be so rad. We can't wait to see all of it. Yeah, and then after that, we're off on our spring tour for almost a month. So we'll be out in the spring with a band called 20 Spot from the Chicago, Illinois area, and that's going to be opening up for us. Shout out to them. They're awesome guys. And just working the new record, we've been receiving amazing, amazing accolades on this new body of work of ours, 5s out of 5s, 10s out of 10s. It's just been really humbling. And completely exciting because of the fact that we're receiving these, and the bands, we're just ecstatic. You know, we took risks, big risks on this record. It's a diverse record. I painted with very broad strokes when I wrote the record. So for everybody to be just completely, infatuated with the record, and I don't use that word I use that in all humility, because of the fact that we never expected this type of reaction to what we're getting right now. So we're completely blown away.
It's so great. I mean, Hi-Fi Drive-By, one of my favorites. So that's got like a total, like almost like Jellyfish ELO influence. Like there are a couple songs on here I'm hearing the Beatles, you know. PRAB, that groove is awesome. It's total disco metal. And man, you got the moves like Jagger, Mark, and I can't wait to see you.
Oh, thank you, Emily.
Dancing to that.
Yeah, that's what I do. I perform, you know, I really try to bring a 70s type of vibe to this record. You know, I was listening to a lot of eclectic music and a lot of eclectic musicians, not to get long-winded about it, but, you know, like Hi-Fi Drive-By, we really try to bring the feeling of like an Earth, Wind & Fire type of thing. There's a lot of R&B and funk and a soul on this record, mixed in with punk rock, metal, and hard rock. So it's basically a combination of us throwing a bunch of our musical taste into a blender and, you know, coming out with it. The writing was just really, also too, I really wanted to have a lot of sincerity in the writing. Emily, I never wanted the book Bullet Boys to be known as this sex joint, you know, cock rock band forever. So, you know, I think with the last two records, we really stepped out and, have done other things that, that people want. You know, we've expanded our fan base. Our fan base has become, eclectic and, very youthful with our old fans who I love very much, but even our old fans have just been really excited about the reinvention of the band and where we've been going. And, From Out of the Skies is just like their summer record. People have been telling us this is the record of the year for them. They've waited so long for a band to come out and, you know, a record that's basically for everybody.
Yes.
You know, this record has a lot of imagery from the city where I grew up in, which is Los Angeles. And I wanted to evoke lyrically painting pictures of words that would kind of focus on the city. Also, too, this record is dedicated to underdogs that never win. And that premise is throughout the whole record. So I think people have really been feeling it, like, because of what we're going through in this crazy world of ours as of late. And there's a lot of uplifting music, but there's a lot of introspective things that have the lyrical content was something that I was able to switch gears and to be really honest with or my poetic approach, which was very, very difficult and very hard to be really honest and to express yourself in that way on some of these songs, which I did.
It's very, very cool. And it is a big risk because, you know, you still have your fans listening to Smooth Up In You on Sirius. And,
sure.
You know, and the fact that they're embracing the album with open arms and you were brave enough to move forward and do what you felt in your heart without worry about alienating some of those fans. Like, was that ever a concern of yours?
Yes.
Are we going to alienate that group of fans that's still listening to old school Bullet Boys and they don't want to see this evolution?
No, because, you know, I don't think fans should, and I love my fans with all my heart, and kudos to everybody that has been around and supporting us. We have nothing but love for them, for real. But we have to be able to grow as musicians and grow as artists. And it's been amazing that we're one of the few bands where our fans have let us do that, where there hasn't been this emotional kickback of, you know, people being upset about the sound and everything else, but because of the fact that we have been reinventing for the past three records. So it's not like all of a sudden there's just this thing, you know, everybody knows that Elefante, we did, you know, so well with that. We charted in the CMJ National Rock Radio charts with our record, last record, Elefante. So this record, you know, people are gravitating to it. So it's like, you know, it's like, I don't know, I can't explain it, but we're not on a fast ascend. We're on a slow working ascend. And I actually am very happy about that because the record will be around for a long time. It's just not, you know, a candy bar where you munch it down and, okay, I've heard it. That's it. You know,
exactly. It's a lot to process and to digest because it is so diverse. So, you know, that's really cool. I love that. And I love that. So you guys recorded this at Dave Grohl's studio.
Yeah, 606 Recording Studios. Yes, we're very, I've been saying this in all articles. I just love David Grohl with all my heart. He gave us the opportunity to come into their studio to do this body of work. And, you know, he thought that we should be there. We took risks on this record and he loved the music.
Cool.
So
and you got to play his guitar, right?
On some of the
tracks. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. He left the acoustic guitar for us, and they set up this amazing drum set for us to record on that they record on. So you know, the acoustic guitar actually that I used, that he recorded a lot of songs of the Foo Fighters on that guitar. So it was very, very magical and very, very loving. And I thank him with all my heart, and I hope that he gets a chance to hear one of these interviews one of these days and go, man, that son of a gun. Oh, that guy's, you know. Because for somebody to come in like him and to be a champion of our band is completely magical and completely, something that we've been putting out into the universe and that came back. It's just been amazing. And then, one of my best bros, Jesse Hughes from the Eagles of Death Metal came in and sang on our first single, The Evil, which was completely out of control because I loved the Eagles of Death Metal for so long and one of my favorite bands. And to be able to hook up with him and to find solidarity in music and friendship and bringing me into his band and this new tribe and people, it's just been amazing. And I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot from a lot of the new people and amazing musicians and people that have been around me. That's great. So kudos to him and the whole band for being so loving and supportive of my band. I don't get a lot of people that are in support of mine from my genre. So people that have come in from other genres to be so supportive, it's melted my heart. It just made me, you get filled with so much love and humility when people are coming from other things. And, these other huge artists have contacted me and I don't want to go into name dropping and stuff, but I'm just like, are you kidding me? I just got a call from so-and-so today.
It's so
like,
cool.
What?
It's
How
so
did he
cool.
get my number? How did she get my number? So,
yes.
Like, but you know, there's musicians out there, that are in another upper scale that have contacted me and have been so loving and so kind about what we try to do with this record. And that's a big thing for us, all four of us, because myself, Chad, and Nick, you know, we've been reinventing the band for almost 9 years, and we're finally getting the taste of the fruit of our rewards with the music that we've been releasing, and people going, okay, I get it.
Absolutely.
I get it. You're not trying to write, we'll never write Smooth Up again. That was a one-time thing, that Smooth Up. So you got to hedge forward and write some other things that will be your new classics. So
yeah,
we're told that we have a lot of new classics on this record and Elefante. So we're really excited too, because like when we play gigs, Emily, people are shouting new songs at us constantly.
That's great.
You know, it's just like they don't shout the old songs. You know, that's like we do, of course, our hits and stuff and blah, 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 but everybody's shouting things from 10 Cent Billionaire, the new songs. I mean, we opened up with From Out of the Skies in Wales when we played at Hard Rock Hell Festival. People have never heard the song, and they went nuts and started moshing and going crazy. So it's like, we're doing something cool here. Something's going on. So,
cool.
The four of us, we look at each other and go, you know what? You know, there might be some people out there that don't really give us the time of day, but I think we're giving ourselves the time of day. And I just love all our fans, family, and friends that have been so supportive, Emily, and especially you. You've been so supportive throughout all these years, and such a loving soul, and so badass about the new record. And that means a lot to us, man, because this business is not easy.
I know. Getting worse all the time. I mean, I think we had that discussion.
Yeah.
Like, how are things going to evolve in a way where you guys can keep on doing this for us and make a living? Like, it's really, really a major issue. And we've talked about that. I don't know what the answer is, but I'm just grateful that you continue to forge forward, because
thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I gotta say, but we're grateful that people are coming to see us. I mean, it's just like, you have no idea, like, the love that we have when people, yeah. I mean, people are filling rooms, we're playing a lot of sold out shows. So that really speaks volumes that people are coming out and taking the time and getting in their cars and, paying the money or whatever to come out and see us. And any rock bands that have that going on, they should just feel blessed every morning that they wake up.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of much huger bands, of course, than us. And, there's so much talent out there, and, we're just forging ahead and just trying to do the best that we can with what we have.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk a little bit about go way back, because I was talking to Mark, and Mark was like, did you know that he worked? Ask him about, did he work with Ozzy? I know you played with Rat for a while, right? Back in the day.
Yes. And
Did you also have some involvement with Ozzy? Tell us about, let's take us all the way back to those days for a minute.
Well, absolutely. I was going to be the guitar player for Ozzy. I was picked as a guitar player by Ozzy and Sharon. And I rehearsed with the band for a couple months. And right when we were getting ready to go and start touring in Europe, they decided that for me to keep my guitars that he'd gotten me and everything else, and that they were going to be working with a guy by the name of Bernie Torme to do that tour, because Ozzy thought that I was just too young still, and they were just still getting over Randy, and there was a lot of similarities that I had to him. About, you know, kind of like Randy, I guess, and from what he explained to me and Sharon explained to me. And that's just basically what happened. I was the guy, and then they got somebody else, and, you know, I ended up just, you know, doing a lot of work and not gigging.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, what an amazing experience. What an amazing thing to be handpicked by them. I mean, just to be in that family of players that had that experience even. And, I mean, it's so funny. I've said this to you before. It's like so many people don't realize what a great guitarist you are because you've got pipes.
Oh, thank you.
You've got, like, amazing pipes, and you can sing your ass off, but you can also play your ass off, and that's kind of where you started.
Oh,
and,
thank you.
Even with
with absolutely.
Rap, you know? Yeah.
Yes, no, absolutely, with Rat, too. I was like, and that happened right after the Ozzy gig thing didn't happen. And I just want to say, you know, I love Ozzy and Sharon so much, and they were so loving and so kind to me. And Ozzy was such a sweetheart to me. I just love him with my heart, and for giving a young kid that, you know, that experience and stuff, and was just amazing. And then after that, I was really close and still pretty close with Stephen Piercy, and was very close with Robin Crosby. Very close friends.
Oh, man.
So after that,
that was a huge loss.
Happened.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I miss him all the time. I loved him so much. He's such an amazing dude. But they gave me the opportunity and they brought me into Rat. I said, listen, you know, F Ozzy, come and be a Rat. Steven said, come in the band. We want you to play with us. So I ended up working with them for a while. And, we were able to write, I wrote one of their first, hit songs, which is You Think You're Tough. With Robin. So that was my, how would you say, my...
Your contribution.
My contribution. Thank you so much. Yes, for the Rat legacy. But no, I love Rat, dude. I mean, and here's another thing, you know, when Steven had to, you know, just basically let me go out of the band. He wanted me to form my own band. He says, you know, you got a great voice and you're doing all this stuff and I just need somebody to come up there and just play and just be the guy in the back.
Yeah.
So they ended up getting Warren, and you know, dude, I had to see them be gigantic. Like, it was so jacked up.
I know,
like,
right?
Because we were really close friends, and, you know, Robin wanted me in the band, and, you know, there wasn't that connection, and we had this, you know, connection. You know, I'm younger than all those guys, too, so,
yeah.
You know, I was always getting holy hell from Bobby Blotzer all the time. You know, he really didn't like me too much. You know, Juan was just a sweetheart, you know, was always there to, you know, teach me and was very, very kind. Robin, you know, we were with each other all the time. He would make me breakfast in the weekends and shit, you know. Come over here, dude. We got to work on some music, man, you know. And sit there and light a cigarette up. Hey, I got this riff. Do you have something to match? You know, he's so badass. You know, Robin wrote, I mean, from far as I know, he wrote all the songs, man. You know, that guy was a songwriting just crazy, amazing genius. So, but yeah, so we came in, I was rehearsing a lot of times and, you know, I have to say this, back in the day, I have to give Steven so much props and so much love because he was the juggernaut that made that band happen.
Yeah.
The other guys, when he first got the other guys, Bobby was playing with Dawkins and so was Juan. So like, you know, when they come into rehearsal, they'd always remind Steven, you know, dude, Dawkins my band and blah, blah, blah. I'm just doing this, you know, to help you out. And Steven was so cool. He's like, yeah, thanks, man. You know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, but he had his plan was predestined. He already knew what was going to go down.
Right.
He had a vision. He put it out into the world. He put it out into the universe. He knew it. You know, like one of the coolest things I still remember, I talked to him about this all the time. He goes, he starts laughing. Because I remember all these things. I go, you would always have a calendar. And at the end of the last day of every month, before they got signed, he wrote, Rat will be signed on this day on every end of the month. So he was like, he was like hedging already. He was like, no, but
do you know what that is?
That's one of the first people that.
That's The Secret. You know that book, The Secret?
That's The Secret. Yes. Yes.
It is.
So he was doing The Secret a long time ago. So, wow. But I was so fortunate to be able to see him and what he did and how hard he worked. And let me tell you something. Stephen Pearcy worked his behind off.
Yeah.
He worked hard. He was up every day. Posters, flyers, talking to people, connections. Every day was something. Every day was rat. Every single day.
Every day. Hardcore.
And he was the reason that the band became what they became. And people will scoff me and say whatever, but him and Robin, they were the team.
They were the team.
They were Joe Perry and Steven Tyler of L.A.
Well, what do you think about what's happening now? I mean, what are your thoughts? Because I was so excited to see the reunion at M3 last year. Like, it was tears, you know, to see them, you know.
It's hard, dude. It's like, you know, people grow up and they get older. And, you know, there's just things that people go through. And, you know, I don't really know what to say about any of that. You know, I just love them so much. You never know what's going to happen, but, you know, I just love Stephen and have a lot of respect for Stephen Pearcy. I love chatting with him. He always, you know, when I talk to him, he still gives me great advice.
That's so cool.
On things, you know, that I had, you know, things that are going on with me, and say, what do you think? He's a dude. Listen to me on this one, you know,
yeah.
It's like, okay. So he's like so badass still. And, you know, he's got a new record coming out, but he just won't stop either. So he keeps on going. We played a couple of shows with him as of late, and we had a really, really good time. So I just love him with all my heart and have a lot of respect for him. And rest in peace to Robin Crosby, who I miss very, very much. I talk to Steven about him all the time, and I go, dude, I miss him so bad. He goes, dude, I miss him so fucking bad.
Ugh,
you know, so
it's heartbreaking.
A lot of guys that, yeah, it really is, you know, because a lot of the guys that are friends that have passed away, I think about them all the time. I think about Janie all the time.
Oh, God.
You know, we had a really tight friendship, and we were always trying to talk to each other and give each other advice when we were down. And, you know, he called, nice motherfucker. Like, I know, man, those cocks, whatever. You know, we'd get on the phone and start, by the time the conversation was done, we were cracking up.
I love it because, you know, it's a small club.
Like that. I really miss him, man.
It's a small club. Like, the group of you guys that kind of built this empire, and you will always be known as this core group of people. And so you guys understand each other. You have a different understanding of each other. I'd love to be a fly on a wall.
Yes.
Listening to some of the conversations you guys have, because
the conversations are brutal.
Sure they are.
I was just hanging with Chipson up last night, and we were talking about some stuff, and he goes, you know, we get into these conversations, and before we even start, because I know what he's going to say, so we just start laughing. I go, my God, I know what you're going to say. It's going to be brutal. He goes, this is so brutal, but I got to tell you this, brother. It's like,
oh man,
it's
you gotta tell.
Now that,
you gotta
tell.
We
are a little bit older.
Hi. Yeah.
Oh, I will for sure. I just love him. But you know, now that we're older, I think we're able to like share stuff and laugh about stuff that we shouldn't really be laughing at, but we can now because we're at that certain point. And you're like, hey man, the fact that we're even doing this and people coming to the shows, we're just blessed.
It's amazing.
So
that's right attitude. That is the right attitude. And if you don't laugh, you know, you'll cry because
totally.
You guys have been through the ringer and you've come
come
back out on the other side, and you're still standing and you're still making people laugh and you're still making people dance and shake their ass, and good on you for that,
man. That's what it's all about to us. Yes, about dancing and shaking the ass. That's what we're all about.
That's what it's
loving
all about, man.
And bringing that.
I know.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm so happy I got to talk to you.
Yeah, Emily.
Seriously, we got to, I don't know when you're coming back east on this tour, but I'm going to be watching for you. I think you guys are
absolutely.
You're coming back soon. I got something on my calendar.
Yes, I think we'll be there in May. So just go and check out our dates. They're all over the place, and definitely.
So we're so grateful to have you back on Talking Metal again. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And I'm going to check you out. Everyone check out the new album. It's called From Out of the Skies. Look at your go check out Twitter and the website, and you can find out all the dates when we can see Bullet Boys live in concert, and go out and support, because these guys are the best.
thank you so much. And Emily, thank you for your friendship, girl, because, you know, sometimes people don't realize, but, you know, we're good friends, and I really, really appreciate your friendship and everything that you've done for all of us rock bands, and always pushing us and always keeping us in the public eye. It means a lot to us.
Man.
Thank you so much.
That
love
means
you.
So much to me. Love you too. I'll see you soon, okay?
Okay, honey. Take
right.
care. Have a great day, everybody.
You
bye.
Too. Bye.
I don't even know how I'm doing.
Right there, some new Bullet Boys, D-Evil, off the new Bullet Boys record, which is from Out of the Skies. So definitely check that out, the new Bullet Boys album. Some of that guitar, that acoustic guitar you'll hear on the record, was actually Dave Grohl's acoustic loaned to Mark to play on the record. So good stuff. And that's going to do it for today's episode of Talking Metal. Big thanks to Lizzie and Mark for joining us. Thanks to Dustin for helping coordinate the interview with Mark. And thanks to Chip for helping line up the interview with Lizzie Borden. That'll do it. Any final words, Emily?
I don't really have anything to say. Ozzy, do you have anything to say?
Our dog, Ozzy, 11 years old, is here on the bed with us.
He's looking at me.
Yeah, well, because you had some crackers and cheese over there. Yeah. He's so old.
He is an old wolf.
Yeah.
And when he dies, I'm going into hiding for like 2 years straight, and I'm never coming out again.
Yeah, we've seen him just slow down. I mean, he still seems happy, but he's definitely slowing down.
Yeah, last night, I think he's getting really senile too. Last night, he got up and was walking in circles for like 5 minutes. And I finally turned on the light and he was like sitting there like the Sphinx. He finally like settled down. But it was really weird.
You know what's weird? I don't remember that at all.
Oh, you were angry.
Really?
Yeah, you were grouchy.
Yeah.
How do you do it? It's typical. I was worried about him. I mean, if Ozzy's up in the night, I'm up in the night.
Right.
So I always, I always hear him. If he's licking his chops or he's uncomfortable, I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah. Wow. It's like I have no recollection of that. Anyways.
We digress. We love Ozzy.
Stay tuned for the very next episode of Talking Metal with Tamie Down from Faster Pussycat. Thanks. We'll see you then.